From KCRW, this is Greater LA. It's the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Welcome. Happy holidays. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A new LA City Council session began last week, and one of the new people on the dais is Tracy Park, who won the election in District 11, LA's West Side, to succeed Mike Bonin. Park is one of five new members. She campaigned on a couple of big issues, homelessness and public safety, and she joins a council that's been hammered by protests in recent weeks after the release of a racist audio tape. Park is a moderate, a former Republican from years ago, now a Democrat, who joins a city council that, as a whole, is leaning farther to the left. Tracy Park, welcome to Greater LA.
Thank you for having me.
Were you expecting those protests? I mean, how are you going to approach these first weeks when those things happen at city council, or at least they increasingly are happening at each city council meeting?
You know, it's unfortunate that we are in the circumstances that we're in. And I think that the level of anger and frustration being expressed by the folks that are taking their time to come to those meetings is something that all of us on the city council need to reckon with. Unfortunately, significant damage has been done to the relationships between our local elected officials and the constituents in this city. And it is going to take us some time to repair those relationships.
Some folks who were there at the council meetings, and they've been there for months and even years, have been protesting the actions on the homelessness issue in front here in LA, which is of crisis proportions, as you know. And I do want to talk about housing and homelessness. One of the main issues that you were running on was ending encampments. Mayor Bass just announced a program called Inside Safe that would move unhoused people indoors. Do you support that?
I do. I welcome the opportunity to partner with Mayor Bass and empower her to achieve the goals that she has set for our city.
Do you think it's the same thing as a sweep when you're talking about getting people indoors? Indoors safe sounds a lot like moving people indoors, whether they want to or not.
My understanding is that the mayor intends to lead with offers of shelter and services and housing and incentivizing people to come inside where they can get the help that they need and where they're safe and they can begin the process of stabilization and recovery.
I know your district has some of the highest rental and housing prices in all of LA, the city of LA. I mean, how do you intend to lower rents or at least get rents to a place where people can actually afford to live in this city and increase the supply of affordable housing in District 11?
So I think it is really important that good affordable projects and workforce housing are given priority in the district. I am very encouraged by Mayor Bass's executive directive, which is going to speed up the timeline for those types of projects. There is widespread interest in and support for good, affordable housing and workforce housing development on the West Side. And it is absolutely essential that we are not only prioritizing those, but investing in those so that the West Side is accessible to people of all different kinds of backgrounds and income levels. We want folks who are already working in our communities to be able to live where they work. And you're right that, you know, the cost of living on the West Side, as it is in many parts of the cities, has unfortunately become prohibitively high. And that is something that I am well aware of. And that is a need that we are going to be very sensitive to moving forward.
Let's shift to public safety. You campaigned on expanding the LAPD. You'll be on the dais with other city council members who have not only opposed the LAPD, but have said we should get rid of it. So there obviously are different opinions at LA City Hall about what to do about the LAPD. The police union actually ran a PAC to support your candidacy. At your swearing-in ceremony, you also claimed that police officers, quote, have been villainized long enough, and that stops with me. What did you mean by that, and why do you believe the LAPD should be expanded?
Yeah, so, you know, I had decided before I ever formally launched my campaign that public safety was a hill that I would be willing to die on. And that is a hill that I am not coming off. We have seen staffing levels at LAPD fall to some of the lowest levels in history. And we're going to continue to see those numbers decline with anticipated attrition and retirements moving forward. We all want our police officers engaged in constitutionally based best practices. I recognize that different communities have different relationships with the police, but at the end of the day, they are absolutely essential. Unfortunately, because of some of the rhetoric and actions demonstrated by my predecessor in CD11, you know, there have been real breach of trust and morale issues with LAPD. And when I said that that kind of villainization stops with me, that is what I mean by it.
Before you let us go, what do you say to people who have lost faith in LA's elected officials following, you know, accusations and obviously convictions of corruption and, you know, backroom dealing, broken promises? We had the former mayor on last week, Antonio Villaraigosa, who likened it to ancient Rome burning. How do you fix that among your constituents and get people feeling better about the city?
What I can tell you is that for my part, leading with transparency, being accessible and engaged with my communities, making decisions in the daylight and in collaboration with the constituents that I represent is how I intend to lead.
Tracy Park, the new LA City Council member representing Council District 11. Madam Council member, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. Congratulations on your new role.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great afternoon.
All right, coming up, the scrumptious, caloric, and melodic joys of the holidays. Fried for Hanukkah and unified by song for Kwanzaa. That's yours on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA from KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Tonight is the fourth night of Hanukkah, and the story goes a little like this.
I always tell people that ask about Jewish holidays, I say, we're minding our own business, we got attacked, we fought back, we won, we ate.
To get a little more specific, Hanukkah celebrates events nearly 2,000 years ago, when a Syrian Greek army destroyed the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. The story goes that a small amount of the oil that the Jewish people had to light the temple lasted 8 nights instead of just one. So how do Jewish people today celebrate that miracle?
Oil, right? So let's fry a bunch of stuff. Let's jelly donuts are pretty darn tasty, you know?
Today, midway through those 8 celebratory days of Hanukkah, we're going around LA to hear about some of those fried foods that are traditional this time of year and the stories behind them.
All over the world, for many centuries now, Jews have marked Hanukkah by eating foods fried in oil. My name is Lara Rabinovich. I am a food writer and historian. There's no real Jewish food. Per se. The vast majority of foods that Jews eat are an adaptation of whatever foods are eaten in the cultures or countries in which they find themselves living. And that includes jelly donuts or sufganiyot.
We are frying sufganiyot, which are jelly donuts that are traditional for Hanukkah. My name is Doug Weinstein. I'm the owner of Diamond Bakery on Fairfax. I'm the current steward of the legacy. Okay, so we're standing inside the back door looking into the bakery that hasn't changed in 60 years. To the left is a barrel mixer that mixes 600 pounds of dough. And we've got a row of mixers. And we've got two big ovens. It's just a beautiful, beautiful space if you're a baker. So the sufganiyot means sponge. And so it does absorb some of the oil because the mitzvah is to have oil to honor the miracle of the oil lasting 8 days instead of just one. And so we take, it's a slightly richer formula than a regular raised donut. And then we fill those with raspberry jam. We fill them with lemon, with the vanilla custard and chocolate custard. You know, I'm not a big donut fan, but I just had one of these because I had to do quality control, and they're delicious. Smelling like oil until Valentine's Day isn't my favorite thing, but that typically is how long it takes to get the smell out of my skin. From frying latkes and sufganiyot, but you know, the joy it brings other people, fulfilling on the tradition, you know, that's what keeps me going.
This is Richard from Baba Saleh Synagogue, right here in Fairfax in Los Angeles. Most of the people from that this community is from North Africa, and probably 80% of them are from Morocco. We have, all of us have Moroccan traditions. So we eat Moroccan food, and we do Moroccan dance and Moroccan music. So Morocco for us is really part of our everyday life. And by the way, if you haven't tasted Moroccan food, it's one of the best in the world. During Ramadan, we have what's called sfange, and it's a Moroccan kind of donut. It's cooked in oil. It's pretty heavy, you know, but it's so delicious. And we eat it with either jam or with the sugar. And the sugar is put on the top. It's not inside. So it's nothing like the sufganiyot that we have here. Sfange is very particular to Hanukkah. And, you know, it's the same shape. It's like a donut shape. It has a hole in the center. It's really delicious. I don't know one place where you can eat it here in LA. I mean, in Morocco, it's all over the place. They serve it. You know, there is a guy that sits on his, how do you say, cross legs like this. And he has a huge pan of oil. And then he dips the sponge in the oil. And he kind of serve it, you know, with improvised red, green thread. And everybody loves it. And they eat it with tea. And it's really, really delicious.
My name is Elizabeth Heitner, and I grew up in New York City as an Ashkenazi Jew. I am the chef owner of Mali, a pop-up here in Los Angeles that pays homage to my Jewish heritage and pays homage to my partner Nestor Silva's Mexican heritage. The two main foods that we're making for Hanukkah this year are sufganiyot, which we fill with guava jam and a mascarpone filling. And the other one is our sunchoke latke, which we serve with a mole amarillo, crema, and fresh apples. Do you want to kind of talk about guavas?
So guavas are pretty significant in my household. Hi, my name's Nestor Silva. I'm a native Angeleno. I grew up in East LA. My mom is from Mexico and my dad's from Argentina. We've always had a guava tree. It didn't matter where we lived. For some reason, the guava tree always followed us. So I have distinct memories of my mom making like guava jam.
whenever I make the guava jam now and you come home from work, you're like, wow, it smells like my childhood in here. And I always think that's so sweet.
I almost like think I'm going to catch my mom behind the stove making this jam, you know. We've had a lot of like Jewish people that grew up in Mexico City approach us and tell us like how special their meal was. And this idea of just like connecting with people and feeding them from the heart has always been really important to us.
So you want to know what I make basically for Hanukkah? With the potatoes and eggs, I either try to make little balls out of them and fry them, because my kids love it that way, or flatten them and make little round ones, just like latkes. My name is Lobat Abrams. I moved to the United States when I was 11 from a Jewish family. In Iran, it was a little different. It's not like here where every corner there's a temple and there's a kosher shop in every corner, like a butcher. We were absolutely a minority, you know, growing up in a ultimately dominant Muslim country. It was very different, very different. The revolution was starting to happen and it was not safe for us to continue living there. So Americans, I think they do applesauce, right? I'm not a fan of that. So I try to do my own little spin of my Persian cooking. So there is no applesauce on the table unless my American son-in-law requests it. And then I put it on the table. Hanukkah, especially, is such a beautiful holiday of perseverance and strength and coming together as a community.
That story, by the way, was produced by KCRW's Robin Estrin.
All right, from Hanukkah, let's take a look at another holiday and festivity this holiday season. Kwanzaa was created back in 1966 to honor African-American culture and heritage. And maybe it's a celebration that folks don't know much about. So we brought in a professor of African-American studies at UCLA, Scott Brown, who's here to tell us more about it. Scott Brown also authored the book called Fighting for Us. Professor, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Give us a brief overview of exactly what Kwanzaa is and how it was created.
Kwanzaa is a holiday that was created in 1966 by a cultural nationalist group called US. The chairman of that group is Maulana Karenga, now known as Dr. Maulana Karenga. And he, along with others in the organization, were really dedicated to having affirmations of Africa. As you know, African Americans are one of the few groups in the U.S. whose oppression is linked to a kind of defamation of their history. So there's so much that we have done and are still doing to project a more positive and affirmative view of our heritage, African heritage. So there are harvest festivals, and so Kwanzaa celebrates seven principles: unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. And they're all in Swahili words because Kiswahili was the language of Pan-Africanism of the 1960s. So the holiday is really a commemoration of those seven principles, and each day has specific meaning around that particular principle. And it's grown over the years to become this huge holiday that's not just celebrated in the U.S., but as folks in the diaspora have moved about, so has the holiday.
The celebration, or at least part of the celebration, came about because of racial unrest of the 60s, right? I mean, I know you had Newark and Detroit and Watts and so many other places where there was unrest. Given the rise, even given today, the rise in hate crimes that we've seen and recent uprisings, does it feel like Kwanzaa is even more important to observe now?
I think it's still very important, but I would want to add a little more context to the saying it came out of unrest, because the Black Power movement and Black consciousness movement of the 60s, it's connected to so many different things. If you broaden your concept of unrest to include anti-colonial struggles, because remember, African nations are getting independence in the late 50s and 60s. That has a huge impact on the way that Africa is perceived. Some of those leaders came and studied and went to school at colleges in the United States. A number of African artists, Hugh Masekela, lived in Los Angeles and actually had a connection with the organization that started the holiday itself. So there's a lot of that going on. The unrest in urban America dovetails on, it coincides with this growing Black consciousness, but those uprisings are tied to socioeconomic and political issues locally, and just as they are today. So what has happened in more recent times is that with the Black Lives Matter movement, which is also a very powerful affirmation of the humanity of Black people, young people are looking at these moments of creative, independent opportunities to take space on the calendar. So if you think of the holiday Juneteenth, which predates Kwanzaa, you think about more recent holidays like Black Love Day in February or Kwanzaa, which started in 1966, all of them become more appealing as people start to look more inward for the kinds of things that affirm their humanity when the larger society has done things that do not.
What does Kwanzaa look like and sound like in your house? I hear music plays a big part of your celebration.
Yes, music usually plays a part of most celebrations. A lot of people have African drummers. Now, in my house, I play music that locks into the principles. So if you take, for instance, the Umoja, I'll play a song called We Are One by Frankie Beverly and Maze. And so when I have folks over for a principal, you're hearing R&B songs, and some other songs too, but ones that really lock into that idea. Maybe with self-determination, I might play Ain't No Stopping Us Now. That's a bit of an anthem that I like. I play that on Kujichagulia, self-determination. I also like to play music from different parts of the African world. So I'll play a song by Bob Marley called Africa Unite. I'll play all kinds of songs by Fela and different artists to try to really show the Pan-African character of the holiday.
Well, thank you very much for talking about it with us, Professor. I know Kwanzaa. Happy Kwanzaa to you, by the way. December 26th through January 1st. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. 7-day holiday.
Through the new year. All right. Professor Scott Brown from the African American Studies Department at UCLA. Thank you so much for coming on, and Happy New Year to you too as well.
Happy New Year to you as well. Thank you.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, harrowing and uplifting stories of the holidays. Tales that'll make you believe in the magic of the season for sure. That's tomorrow on Greater LA. What are your thoughts? What's your magic? Your tales? Do you have a story idea for us? Let us know at our website, kcrw.com/GLA. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast too. You don't have to wait for 2:30 and 6 o'clock. You can hear it anytime when you subscribe at kcrw.com/GLA. Juliana Mayo, Nihar Patel, Zeke Reed, Sonia Geis, Arnie Seipel, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, and Holly Adams all helped piece the episode together this evening. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your time and your ears.